Hey, Truck Roy here, and I've got Horace with us, and we're talking about some of the nitty-gritty of the techniques that we're going to use when we talk to people out there about white nationalism or just racial reality, essentially stopping white genocide. That's our common goal we have. And, Horace, I listen to a lot of your shows. In fact, I listen to probably every one of your shows several times because they're really food for the soul, if you ask me. And I enjoy all the wild stuff you talk about, and I enjoy the nitty-gritty tactical stuff. And in this last show, about the last 30 minutes of it there, you were talking a lot about the term white as it regards to race and how it's better to maybe personalize that a little bit.
Well, thanks for the kind words. As your show has always been kind to Horace the Avengers, Follow the White Rabbit, on this little growth spurt we've had over the past year and a half or so. And yes, in the last half hour of the last show, and I'm actually going to be breaking that out because our message, the word has come down, it's going to go prime time. I don't exactly know what they mean by that, but the last part of the last podcast is a message to the dissidents. It starts in the last hour of Follow the White Rabbit 63. After the first hour, it starts. It's the last half hour. It's very short. One of the key concepts I go over, and what I'm doing is breaking down the mantra and trying to explain why a handful of things are done. Very simple things. It's maybe not easy to get used to it if you've been around for 15 years or 10 years or even 5 years and you're used to using phrases like the white race. Those phrases are heavily loaded. Our enemy targeted just a handful of phrases, and most of you have heard of them. Words like racist, Nazi, neo-Nazi, white supremacist, the white race. You know, these phrases, sound bites, have been targeted with literally at least $500 billion in programming. And you don't want to fight that programming. You want to pick your shots. So saying the white race, and all your listeners out there will have said this, and they're going to get one anti-white in the crowd that will immediately start asking questions. What is the white race? Who is the white race? And they're like programmed to do this. And based on your answers, based on if they're a true anti-white, they'll call themselves an anti-racist. They'll have exactly questions to ask you based on what questions you answer with. And so we skip around that by saying my race. You see, we have this wonderful advantage on this planet. We're already white.
Yes, yes.
We don't have to say the white race. We're not black. So we can just say my race, our race, and walk around $500 billion worth of programming. And what's wonderful about this, Truck, is you dictate not only who's going to be crazy enough to ask the question, but you dictate the only question they can ask. It's a really silly question. What race are you?
Right.
Really silly. It's like being at a group of paleo conservatives and someone says the white race and say, what do you mean by that? No one's going to ask that question at a Stormfront conference. It's really a silly question. But at the same time, you're dealing with a lot of programming. By saying my race, our white workers, you know, if you're at a construction site, you can say our white workers, always personalize it. When you use the, you create an abstraction that can create a whole bunch of different questions that can come out of that. You can just say our race, my race. Everyone knows what color you are. I've never been walking down the street and have asked anyone run up and say, are you white?
Right. And this is, it seems like such a small point, I'm sure, to a lot of our listeners, but it's huge. I mean, it makes all the difference in the world. After listening to your show the other day, I was at my workplace and I was talking to one of my customers who I knew leans our way. You know, he's not rabidly anti-white, but is still really sensitive to political correctness. And I used that exact technique. You know, we talked for probably 45 minutes, and we were talking about immigration and this and this. And I said, you know, as our nation has fewer of our people and more people from the third world, and you know, it didn't bother him at all, and I know the difference between his reaction and the reaction that you get when you say the white race, because I've done that. I've made that mistake, and I can remember talking to people.
Well, it's not necessarily your fault. It's not necessarily a mistake. And what I tell you what I did, people used to get on my back about it, especially guys like Bob Whitaker, simply because in the mantra he says, my race, the white race. He combines the phrases to try to disarm it. He's doing something technical there, but generally you should never – what you're going up against is immediately $500 billion worth of programming, and you don't want to do that. to get your message across, because a vast majority of white people across this planet agree on certain fundamentals. You just end up arguing over the programming, trying to get around the programming.
Sure.
And that's what you did in your conversation by personalizing it. Very difficult to for people. If a black man standing there saying my race, it's very difficult to attack him. If he says the black race, he creates an abstraction. It's very easy to attack an abstraction.
That's right. And, you know, I have a feeling that Bob's mantra is geared specifically towards a confrontational environment, maybe a television talk show or something like that. And in that environment, it is absolutely deadly effective. I think that
if you're sitting there and you're white and you keep saying my race, our white, you keep personalizing it. Always take ownership. Always right. Personalize it.
And, you know, most of the people that you and I talk or that I talk to, I don't know about you, but I'm sure a lot of our listeners out there are going to be talking to neighbors, coworkers, and it's not really a confrontational environment unless you make it such. And right. I've seen people be very loose, very friendly and agreeing with every point that I say until I say, and as white people, and then all of a sudden you can feel their shoulders tense up and they just like right. all of a sudden, you know, their hackles go up and they're like, whoa, where are you going with this?
What you did was transport them back into an enemy's camp.
Right.
Words are transporters. Songs are like this. I'll hear a song at Christmas time that'll transport me right back into the church pew when I was a little boy. We all do this.
Yeah.
We all do this. Sound is like that. What you're going up against is a phrase, a loaded phrase, that will transport them back into an environment where they were heavily, heavily programmed. We don't want to do that. That's counterproductive. We don't want to transport our audience back to the enemy's camp. Because the vast majority of the time, you'll agree with everything else.
Right. And, you know, Horace, I got to admit, I'm a little step behind Bob Whitaker, and a lot of times I'm trying to catch up and grasp these concepts in my head, and I've realized over the process of trying to get my mind around what Bob Whitaker's doing with the mantra and listening to your show, I've understood the power of sound that you talk about and the power of words, because – you know, I hate to admit this because it sounds so retarded, but when I always used to say, you know, white people or the white race, and when I started saying our people, I had to stop and think about that for a minute.
Our race, my race. Right.
Because
what happens is Bob can turn it on and off. Bob can be talking to a dissident and talk about the white race and then immediately talk to a civilian. You know, a dissident is someone who's already racially aware. Now, how you talk to a dissident and how you talk to a civilian are two different things. As most of the listeners already know, if you're talking to your buddy on Stormfront, the conversation is going to go a lot different than a civilian. I can't turn it off and on like Bob. So when I get my mind around, okay, I'm going to say my race, our people, our white workers, this type of thing. I'm going to always make it personal. I can't turn it off and on. But these are tips. You know, you don't have to do it around a dissident if you're someone that can turn it off and on. I can't, so I try to compensate for it across the board.
Let me tell you, Horace, even around a dissident, I think it's best to personalize it. And the reason why is there is a dangerous temptation out there to make the whole struggle abstract, even among ourselves.
Sure.
And the words
sure.
that we use do that. They program us mentally to see something as abstract or to see it as personal. And I think that's
our race is always building up fantasies too.
Right. And we
really got to watch it because, you know, you get in this question of old Bob Whitaker and wordism and how deep it goes when our race starts subverting some abstract principle for their organic identity. This happens with every ism. So you really got to watch it in white nationalism or conservatism, you know, when they start putting that first. But yes, words, triggers are very important. Our enemy put a lot of money in just a handful, which is interesting.
Right. And the danger is trying to, you know, we're naturally kind of objective people, so we tend to step away from a thing and try to see both sides of it. And
sure.
And when we do that and we talk about, you know, our position is the position that we hope will win, but it's separate from our actual identity, that can be dangerous. And I think these simple little word usages are critical in maintaining a positive good spirit in our mindset as we're going out, because it makes it so much easier. You know, a lot of times when our people go to talk to a civilian, as you would say, we go in there expecting confrontation. and the words we use bring confrontation.
Precisely. That is once I got my mind around old Bob Whitaker's mantra, once I got my mind around how smart this guy was and what he was capable of doing for us, and then it became quite easy listening to him, because what you're doing is running into pitfalls that are by and large unnecessary. The dissidents always say, look, everyone agrees with the vast majority of my message. What is going wrong?
Right.
Well, what's going wrong is we spend a tremendous amount of time getting around words like racist, white supremacist, neo-Nazi, and things like the white race. It's simple stuff, but you can just do a little shift here and there, and listen to an expert on words, a wordsmith, as you might say, and really make hay and avoid those pitfalls. Instead of having a pitfall, you can set an ambush, because if someone asks you what your race is, you already know they're an anti-white. You could say, are you anti-white? Because only an anti-white would ask me something so ridiculous.
Right.
Obviously you're white. Or you can go into the mantra, or you can pick a fight. You can do anything you want to, because really you're dictating not only what question someone's going to ask you, what is your race, but really who has the highest probability of asking it. Now, there's another type of person that can ask it, and that is a little kid. I'm not talking about that.
Right.
We're talking about the what I call the political correctness officer. You know, there's one in every zip code that's going to you see a flyer for Stormfront or something. They're going to do something crazy like call the police or something.
Right.
There's one of those in every area code, and they'll come out. They'll come out and say something. They're so programmed they won't even know about it.
But the beautiful thing about the political correctness officer is he's always an unpopular person. Nobody likes that super politically correct prick that's in your workplace.
No one likes it.
Yeah.
No one likes him. No, they didn't like him in the Soviet Union. They didn't like him in Nazi Germany. They didn't like him. Our race does not like anything heavily programmed, because they'll get on your nerves, no matter what they're programming, it seems like.
Right. Now, we can come back and touch on this again, because words are so important, like the word anti-white. These words have to be used carefully with thought and with precision. But basically, if somebody is against us, they're anti-white.
Sure.
Many of them will say they're against racism. But
no, anti-racism is just a code word for anti-white.
Right.
Yeah. Don't ever let anyone anti-white hide behind environmentalism. Anti-racism, they're just anti-white. That's just a code word for anti-white. And one thing that's key for the dissident to do, because everyone you talk to really wants something to do if someone calls them a name. We always hate being called names and not having anything to say back.
I do.
It's like if you're on the playground and some kid yells, nana, nana, nana. Well, you say nana, nana, nana back. That is human nature. So when called a racist, you got to give them something to do. And what I use is we use the best stuff going, and that's over on WhitakerOnline.org. If someone calls you a racist, you rephrase it. You say, in your opinion, I'm a racist. You're just saying that because I'm white. Anti-racism is just a code word for anti-white. Keep it simple. But also give them something duplicatable. Most of the smart little white rabbits running around on Stormfront, hopping around there arguing this or arguing that, listen, that dissident activities are not necessarily duplicatable, but yet at the same time, we have to have something duplicatable that the masses can use, that want to use to defend themselves.
Right.
That's what's important.
If somebody calls you a racist, you're not going to quote statistics and explain complex arguments. You're going to say, you're just saying that because I'm white. Anti-racist is a code word for anti-white. You're just saying that because I'm white. And you can do that over and over again.
You can do an in your opinion for anything they can call you.
Right.
In your opinion, I'm a white supremacist. You're just saying that because I'm white. Anti-racism, white supremacists, you yell at anyone white. Anti-racism is just a code word for anti-white. Don't let them just make your point. You don't have to do it perfectly. Just make your point. This anti-white stuff is the milk cow with 1,000 tits.
Yeah, and the thing with it is, you know, this tactic, a lot of our people don't want to use this tactic because they say, well, anybody can use this tactic. The opposition can use this tactic.
No, it doesn't. It'll always be traced back to us.
Right, right. Well,
I hope my opposition sits there and reads the mantra.
Oh, me too. Well, it's absolutely devastating for their souls.
This stuff is not something you can twist and turn and steal. That's the last thing they want to do. There's a reason that if you go to the Anti-Defamation League, you're not going to see any posts about Bob Whitaker.
I think that the problem is, you know, a lot of our people are smart and they understand the depth of the situation here. And simply saying na-na-na-na-na like you would on the schoolyard They feel that that's below them. But
yeah, or what generally has to happen is dissidents have to see something working. And once they see something working, they got to get their minds around how they work and what are the people doing. Because only a handful of dissidents are really bah humbug and want to fail. Most of them want to make changes. So if they see something simple they can do to get their particular dissident message across, because I consider probably all of them important in their own time and place, they'll generally do it. But generally, they have to see something working first. That's why I did that particular talk, because our stuff has went wild. And right. So a lot of them are like, okay, I'm a paleo conservative. I don't like your podcast, Horace. It's not for me. I know that, and you know that. But at the same time, I understand Bob. I understand what he's done. What can we learn from this, and what can we do? Give us some simple stuff so we can start getting our feet wet. And that's what I'm doing. I'm trying to help them get their feet wet. These are very simple things. They're so simple. Most people won't realize how effective they are. You know, if you first read the mantra, you don't realize, I didn't realize what all was in there.
Right. Me neither. It's
heavy duty stuff. There is a shortened mantra, you know, Africa for the Africa, Asia for the Asias, white rabbit holes for everybody.
Right.
That is a shortened mantra. And that stuff is potent stuff because you're making your point. You're pointing out the obvious that they see. And you're going to do it over and over again. And this stuff can be worked into whatever you're talking about.
Yeah, I've used that essentially that line from the mantra twice on Facebook in the last couple of days. Because you don't have much room to comment on somebody's post. So I just put in there, what if I told a black man that I wanted to flood every African nation with tens of millions of non-Africans and assimilate the blacks? ? You know, and that gets the point across right away. You know,
well, you're getting them thinking too. You're pointing out something obvious to everyone that no one's talking about in a way that is respectful. It's not using foul language, and you're not talking about things in a way they're used to.
Right. Now you have
our race has to always be entertained to some extent. You always got to razzle them or dazzle them.
Yeah.
You know, they don't like anything old or stale. But at the same time, you're going through some heavy duty programming.
Right. And I'm not much into the razzle and dazzle. I just don't have a whole lot of talent for it. But I do grasp some of the basic points here, and I can at least avoid boring the hell out of somebody with figures and statistics.
No, they don't like what I'm saying about razzle and dazzle. They don't. When I say razzle dazzle, when you say our race or my race, believe it or not, that is a form of razzle dazzle because you're not saying anything they're used to on a psychological level.
Right.
And that's very personal. When you ask them questions like that, you know, what would you do if Africa were being flooded with the Chinese and they were trying to force assimilate the Africans? Wouldn't that be genocide? You're asking them a question. You're invoking a response that actually goes kind of hand in hand with the programming, because Africa, that would be genocide.
Right.
They want to be, and when I say entertained, they want to be intellectually stimulated a lot more than people realize. They don't really like this media. They don't really like a lot of stuff that's going on. And if you can talk to them at the same time in a way that's fresh and new, you can get things across very, very easily.
Right. And you're asking a question. You're saying, hey, let's ask this question together and let's see where this road takes us. It's not confrontational. It's not preaching with boring facts. It's truth seeking.
Sure. Yeah, you can sit there and drill someone with racial statistics, and they instinctively know that too. And some of them like it, but some of them don't. A lot of times you got to start up a conversation, get through the programming, and then see what they're up to, see what they want to talk about.
And let them lead themselves down that road. You know, sure. I don't, you know, just automatically start reciting the mantra to somebody when they come into my business and I start talking to them.
Got to feel them out.
Yeah, you know, they'll start talking about immigration. You can nod your head and say, you know, the real problem here is we've got a demographic time bomb, and we have an aging population. Our people are getting old, and they're bringing in third world people to try to replace us in the working class, and, you know, we're just running out of a tax base, and then let them comment back on that. And now if I'd said that same line, and I said they're flooding us with non-whites and us white people are getting screwed, you know, immediately they would be confrontational and they'd back up. But the line
that I've been using for quite some time about the economic situation is, you know, in 1965, America was 90% European. Right now, according to the CIA, China is 90% Chinese. What would happen if China tried to make itself non-Chinese?
Well,
how would that affect China economically? And then they nod their head. It kind of stuns them. I'm like, America's tried to make itself non-European. And just like if you try to make China non-Chinese, you're going to destroy the place.
Well, you know, I had this exact conversation just a couple of days ago, Horace, or maybe it was yesterday. But instead of saying European, I said our people. You know, yeah. In America, and America was 90% our people. And
you can do it either way. They get it either way. I've never seen a confrontation over it, but those little things can help around the right person, right? You got to feel.
Yeah, and this fellow, I mean, several minutes later, he said, and you know, our people really. I mean, if you look back, it was all people from Europe. And it's so much better when somebody else comes to that conclusion on their own or points it out on their own than if you beat them over the head with it.
Yeah, you can't beat them over the head with anything, but with the exception of the anti-white stuff. But they already pretty much know. They just need someone to point it out to them. And they always like something to say to defend themselves when called a racist. That's what I always say. I say, in your opinion, I'm a racist. You're just saying that because I'm white. Anti-racism is just a code word for anti-white. Give them that. If you give them anything, because a lot of times the dissidents, they want to leave, we have a tendency to want to leave them with too much stuff, expecting them to do way too much. When the first start you got to do with our people is get them to defend themselves. And if you can do that verbally, you can do that anything. You can take that anywhere you want to.
Right.
And they like that. They like that. The average white rabbit, as I call them, will actually do that more than you could even imagine. But this stuff is very catchy. It's not, a lot of dissidents look at it first and say, well, it doesn't seem sophisticated enough for us. And we really have all this stuff built up in our heads on what it takes to succeed. When in fact it is quite sophisticated, believe it or not. It's just it's something sophisticated reduced down to very simple memes.
Right. And another issue is if you get shouted down, you lose. And that sounds like primitive, but the truth of it is you could have a college professor, a rocket scientist that could verbally win any debate. And then if you had somebody from another group who was against us that is just shouting a one-line chant over and over again, if he can shout you down, he wins. If you shout him down, you win.
Well, that's all our enemy does is yell racist, racist, racist.
Right.
Racist, racist, racist. Anti-racism is just a code word for anti-white. You're just anti-white. You're just anti-white. It is the same type of thing. Now that gets into personality. Our enemy, you know, the loudmouth little Jew rabbit out there just shouting and shouting and shouting. You get into personalities. Usually most Europeans in a healthy European society are going to step up and let you talk. Now there's going to be a handful that yell and scream, but it just really depends. If you sound and feel, you're not going to sound or feel like anything they're used to. You're not using any of the buzzwords they're used to setting them off. You can get a lot of things in edgewise, but don't be afraid to make mistakes. Big deal.
Right.
You'll make your point. Because the average European does not like a whole lot of conflict. They don't like loudmouth shouting them down. They want to hear other perspectives. They don't like it. They think it's unfair. So, you know, just make your point and they'll get it.
Right. Now, I'm sure many of our listeners out there are intelligent and they want to hear a logic behind what we're saying here. So let's break this down real quick on how anti-racism is just a code word for anti-white. Because let me give you an example. This morning I posted on Stormfront in the opposing views section, and there was some anti-white poster on there who was saying, I think his screen name was, I don't care about race. And so he's saying, I really don't advocate for any one group. I'm just an individual type idea. And so, but the thing is he's not going on to a black nationalist site and accusing them of racism. He's not going on to an Asian site and telling them that they don't have enough diversity in China or Japan.
This integration, the nativism, the calls of racism are only for white children's, only for white countries, only for white forums. You won't see that in China or anywhere else. On my site, has been remade, and now we can host different videos. And someone that listens to my show did the funniest video I've ever seen. And they went, it's different shots from around the world, and all the shots are quiet. Everywhere he goes, Japan, anti-racist discussion in Japan, it's all quiet. Anti-racist discussion in Africa, it's all quiet. And then it switches back to white countries, anti-racism. And then, you know, we see all these marches and all the anti-whites coming out to confront the, and yell Nazi and racist. It's a great video.
Right. And I've seen that video. It is fantastic. And, you know, one of the reasons why we use this word anti-racist too, or anti-white for anti-racist, is because we really aren't parsing out is a person black, white, Jewish, whatever. We're just saying if you're pushing white genocide, then you're our opposition. And that is really incredibly powerful for our struggle on many levels, because it puts us in with the angels on our side. We're against genocide, and that
yeah, we're in a moral position. They're in an immoral position. We're pro white. They're pro white genocide or anti white. We're pro white, and they're anti white.
Right.
You make, instead of justifying why you would like yourself or why you would want your people to continue, make them justify why you should die out.
Exactly, because you know, a lot of them, they'll want to. Of course, they have their own arguments that they're trying to lure you into, and they want to talk about, well, why don't you like Jews, or why don't you like liberals? I mean, aren't those your own people? Your own people selling you out, huh? Isn't that real? The real problem is among white people, and we're just saying, look, we don't really care.
That's actually what we do address on Bob's Underground Graduate Seminar. The mantra generally. Most whites only argue with whites about such things. Everyone else just has power because some white person gave it to them.
Right.
Or white people voted for them, and they usually don't make two and three. They don't make the mistake two or three times. But in general, that can happen when you get other races. But other races generally back down. I mean, no one's actually crazy enough to try to want to genocide white people. The only example would be those Africans or those Arabs, maybe Muslims that or Mexicans that actually live around us and that are byproduct of the same social engineering.
Yeah,
well, Mexico's in Mexico. The Africans in Africa, they don't have any fantasy about. They don't indulge in the fantasy of genociding Europeans. It's only the crazy ones that we bring in here and program.
Right. I mean, obviously, if you have unstable Mexican or black, and you put them through a school system that tells them that white people are evil over and over again, they may be susceptible to some of that programming. But
a handful are, and then you have a black professor stands up. What we got to do is kill white people,
right?
You know? And but this happens in white countries, is what I'm saying. I mean, you're not necessarily going to get maybe an African dictator that deals with people out of London, doesn't like the bankers or something like that. But by and large, the African wouldn't indulge in that fantasy.
No,
you know.
Well, and
but you're gonna get that in the ghettos of America. You know, some Africans saying we got to murder all the white people or something like that, and they say this. You can YouTube it, but this is by and large because of the social engineering programming that has come out, and we address it. We address the ends. We don't actually, in my podcast, I don't go talk about the social engineering like the Frankfurt School or Tavistock directly. We address what they're going for, and that's white rabbit genocide.
Right, and that's a specific charge. That's not rhetoric. What we're saying there is that there is actually a group of people who should be brought to trial for white genocide, attempted genociding a group of people or people. And
yeah, they're clearly and consistently targeting a group of children for harm or harm/destruction. And in fact, what's funny about this, I've gotten discussions about trying to figure out exactly what was said behind the scenes. That basically anytime someone like Bob Whitaker writes the mantra, it's because someone has the goods on someone, you know, but when you see someone like Tim Weiss in public talk about our genocide, when you see these guys like Noel Ignatieff, who all happen to be Jewish, by the way. But when you see the average liberal talk like this as well, talk about the death of the white race, when you hear this stuff like that, you hear them go into their canned speeches, what you have to understand is that someone had to articulate that at a very high level because everything starts with a sound and a vibration. But behind the scenes, apparently, it was a lot more dramatic post-World War II.
Yeah.
You know, but it's not the immigration and this integration, assimilation in only white countries, keeping us spread out over this massive tracts of land. Look at North America. Look at Canada. Look at the UK, Europe, Australia, New Zealand. Look at these massive tracts of land we're on, only 10% of the population. It is part of a plan, is what I'm saying. And the plan was not to make us multicultural or enrich us. The plan was to kill us. It's that simple. Now, it hasn't worked. It hasn't worked like they thought, but it doesn't really matter. You know, it doesn't. If Saddam Hussein targets a weapon, it doesn't matter whether it's social engineering or mustard gas at a group of Kurdish children to exterminate them. It doesn't matter if it doesn't work. It's still against the law. You know, all you have to do is have a damaged party. But yes, there are. It is a serious deal. The charge of genocide is a serious deal. At the top of my website, right now, whiterabbitradio.net. You can see me go over genocide, what it is and what it isn't. It doesn't necessarily need to be a war crime. It can be a series of human rights violations. And this stuff is very, very serious. Usually, a group of people will escape it for a while, like Saddam Hussein, but then one morning, the whole world comes crashing down and you're in trouble. And it's not a trial, it's a tribunal.
Right, and I think
it's not voting politics, it's not voting. Saddam Hussein didn't really get a vote. He didn't get a jury vote, he got a gavel.
Well, for that matter, over there in Egypt, just in the last couple months, they didn't have an election. They just had a lot of people out in the street on a consistent message.
Basically, yes. There was a lot of professionals at work and all kinds of different stuff going on there, all kinds of different stuff.
Yeah. Now, as far as how I really
– But yes, you'll get tutored on consistent messages if you were in – even if you're in Libya right now working with the supposedly MI6 and the British are going over there, they're going to have a consistent message written for them, just like they did in the Soviet Union before it came down, the Berlin Wall came down, just like we have. But they're generally designed by professionals and – You know.
Yeah, our kind of guy that we look up to and get a lot of stuff from, Bob Whitaker, he actually did this. He was in the CIA, and he helped bring down the Soviet Union, the communists over there.
Right. What they were doing in that society, we're doing the exact same thing we're doing, but geared toward a little thing. You're dealing with a closed society, where if you disagree with scientific materialism of the Soviet Union, you go to the Gulag. And of course, if we disagree with this anti-white programming, if we disagree with the authorities on race or culture or anything else, well, you get called a Nazi who's going to kill 6 million Jews, you lose your job, you lose everything. You know, we've seen this time after time. So it is a very similar type of society. And what he did was they started crafting messages to point out the contradictions. If the Soviet Union is so wonderful, why do you have to have guards at the border to keep people in?
Right.
Very simple things like that. They said over and over, and it's a broken record strategy. And over again, they're pointing out the contradictions, the internal contradictions that no closed system can hold up to.
Right, right.
You know, this immigration is only for white countries. This assimilation is only for white countries. This multiculturalism, which is just really multiracialism, they're always playing with words, is just for white countries. This program of genocide is just for white countries.
Right. You know? Nobody's trying to genetically assimilate the Japanese. Or flood
you. No one's flooding Taiwan with non-Taiwanese and trying to create a blended humanity in only Thailand.
Right.
No one's doing that. This is only for white countries. And by and large, only white leaders are doing it, and a whole lot of Jews, of course, they're there. But by and large, our own leaders are toe-in-toe with this. You know?
Right. So specifically who we're charging with this attempted genocide is the Anglo elite, the people at the
well,
– go ahead.
The people at the top of Western civilization, certain right. groups, it would certainly be isolated among the Anglo elites, but they're far from Anglo.
Right.
You know.
And I think
we're not dealing with your uncle who's a WASP, obviously.
Right. Right. And this is a important to have clarity on what we want. You've got to be able to articulate what you want, who you're charging. You know, what we want is we want to stop white genocide. I've always had anti-whites, and I'm talking about people who are professionally against us, try to lure me into saying that I hate some other group or that I want to see harm done to some other group. But now I can really articulate my specific goals. I want to stop white genocide. And to do that, all you have to do is stop flooding America with hundreds of millions of non-whites, and you have to stop assimilating us. And so,
yeah, stop trying to create a blended humanity in only white countries.
Yeah, it's pretty simple. It's like if somebody is murdering somebody, how do you solve that problem? Well, stop murdering them. If somebody's beating their head against the wall,
Everyone my group disagrees with all have one thing in common. They all look just like us. They're all white or they pretend to be white. You know, Tim Weiss he's Jewish, he writes a book, White Like Me. They look just like us. I call them pink rabbits. They look just like us, but they have no loyalty to us. That's why they're pro-white genocide. They're anti-white. You know, that's really who we have a disagreement with. Now, Obama is very irritating, but we have to admit he was elected by white people.
That's right.
Without white votes, he wouldn't have a chance, and he won't have a chance in the next election. But they're trying to monkey rig all this stuff, and none of it really hasn't worked the way they thought it was going to work. It should have happened a lot faster, and now, of course, they're stuck. And we want to make their lives miserable. We can't really do that any other – the most violent thing to do in this type of system is actually a consistent message.
And it's not physical violence.
No, it's not, but it is violent. Simply, it's just like the analogy I give in my podcast is breaking glass. And on my Twitter, I will put up a link again to a site called breakingglass.com. And everyone listening, excuse me, everyone listening has seen an opera singer break a glass. Well, sound creates a pressure wave. There's a reason you can hear a Britney Spears song and you can feel something from it, good or bad. There's a reason you can hear maybe your favorite opera and you can feel something wonderful. Sound creates a pressure wave. And what an opera singer does is she finds resonance with a glass. And everything in the universe has resonance. It has a frequency at which it'll start vibrating. And then once she finds resonance, once she finds the right note to hit, she will then just start raising the volume to break the glass. And you can see it in the videos. The glass will start violently cavitating. Well, the glass is like the closed structure we're in the West. We got a big glass bubble over us in regards to race. And what we're doing, we're invoking that. We're trying to get that glass to vibrate. And the glass is now starting to vibrate. And once it starts to vibrate, all we do is raise the volume to shatter the glass. What the opponent will do to the opera singer, what the opponent does to an opera singer, is you can keep the glass from being broken by putting liquid in it, by damping. It's a technique called damping. This is actual physics behind this stuff. They use a technique called damping. You pour wine in the glass, and the glass will stop vibrating. It won't break. What our enemy does is they want to start talking about multiculturalism. Right. They want to talk about everything but white genocide. They want to talk about everything but the fact that they're clearly and consistently targeting only one group of children with all this nonsense of assimilation, integration, multiracialism. All this stuff is only for one group of children, white children. They want to talk about anything but that. What we want to talk about is only that.
Right. Their goal is to diffuse and to distract you from your consistent message.
It isn't by accident that the average audience member listening to this has never heard of Bob Whitaker.
Right.
It isn't by accident that you're hearing all this stuff about you're hearing all this stuff about racism. You're hearing all this stuff about white people being victims. It's not by accident that all these different groups are now coming out talking about multiculturalism. They're doing a damping technique. It isn't going to work because our message is so refined. It cannot work. The wine glass analogy is good in a way because it shows you how sound can go to destroy something. It's bad in a way because there is no damping our message. All you can do is delay the inevitable of this system breaking.
Right. The only thing they can really do is get you off of message. And
right. They're trying to do, but...
And you know, anything that succeeds is not accidental. And obviously, someone like Bob Whitaker has a talent for what he's done in his professional career, and he's now dedicated his life to helping us and stopping white genocide. And his message is very, very effective. I am a kind of a cynical person, and I initially doubted it. I hoped it would be effective, but I didn't know that it really would. And it's only really been in the last 6 months, maybe a year, that I've seen how this sort of consistent message can spread quickly. Sure. Because it's easily can be replicated very easily.
Sure, sure. Well, in the past, I have an announcement to make. In the past 90 days, we've had somewhere between – there's all these different mantra videos going up. Some of them have my voice. Some of them don't. And we have some name brand dissidents coming online, coming on message. And over the past, I guess it's 60 to 90 days roughly, we've had roughly – I think it's like 130,000 views on mantra videos roughly that we're guesstimating. These are actual videos on YouTube, and it went from like 20,000 to 100,000 to it just starts spiraling. But you know, that's the way it works. You got to lay a foundation, and then you got to get to it. But everything takes a little bit of time, but the stuff can happen very, very quickly. That's why these type of dissident talks are important for them to understand what buzzwords, because you may see someone famous using very, very big buzzwords like Nazi wants to kill 6 million Jews, and you'll know exactly what they're talking to and who they're talking to.
That's right. And, you know, a lot of times our opposition for decades has been able to basically go on the offensive without having to guard their rear. And
they've had a free rein in London, in Washington, in New York. And what old Bob Whitaker did by sitting down there in South Carolina, what we tried to do in White Rabbit Radio is to announce something very clear. You're no longer going to have a free rein to sit there. You better move.
Right, and right now they're, you know, a lot of them from this generation we've grown up with, they've never had to go on the defensive, and they're quite confused. I was on Facebook this morning, and there's this article that just came out. It says March 4th, so I guess that's today or yesterday. Let's see, what's today? Yeah, that was yesterday it came out. This is on CNN. And the article is titled, Are Whites Racially Oppressed? And
it, sure. And it's pretty amazing what's coming out, isn't it?
It is. I mean, now this, I mean, obviously CNN's not going to become 100% white nationalists overnight, but what's happening here is you're seeing people questioning their own positions. People who were fervently anti-white maybe 2 years ago are starting to wonder about sure. their positions. And I'm not going to read this whole article, but I mean, it's quite lengthy.
You have to understand what we have learned about sound, what I've been taught by Bob, that this is like a virus. It's a matter of finding the right podcast or the right venue to put it prime time. Once it starts going vertical and spreading, kind of like it's doing, that it changes the whole entire dynamics because sound is a pressure wave. You can't unhear something, and sound doesn't exactly end when you think it ends. It keeps carrying through. So you're going to see this stuff come out in all kinds of different ways, and that's what we're witnessing, which is pretty interesting because it sounds like something. How can something so small make such a big impact? Well, it's like a hit song almost. It's just you got to have a venue. Without the internet, obviously, this would all be undoable. But our stuff doesn't break any laws or rules. It's a matter of getting the right group together that can start spreading it. I've yet to do really a video other than a Christmas video. It was the night before Christmas. I haven't done a video, and neither has Bob, but this stuff is starting to go starting to go big time. And one of the last things I wanted to talk about is what I talk about on my particular dissident message is a way to disarm. You know, our people are always called Nazis, neo-Nazis, white supremacists. What's another word?
Haters.
Exactly. And of course, the ideal is to associate you generally with Hitler and generally with 6 million dead Jews. And what Bob does in the mantra is something interesting. He says, but if I tell the obvious truth about the ongoing program of genocide against my race, the white race, liberals and respectable conservatives agree that I'm a Nazi who wants to kill 6 million Jews. You see, there's been so much money put behind Nazi that all they have to do is yell Nazi, and generally you'll shut someone white up. And what you do when you use the word Nazi, neo-Nazi, white supremacist, is what you're doing is, again, you're transporting them back into mommy professor sitting there programming them. We don't ever want to transport. But by jamming it together, what he's doing, jamming together all the association, Nazi who wants to kill 6 million Jews, what you're doing is creating a short circuit against the word. The word no longer has the same effect. It actually starts sounding kind of funny. If we get Ernest Zandel to sit on German television and not say the word Nazi, but just say Nazi wants to kill 6 million Jews, Nazi wants to kill 6 million Jews, and of course you're obeying the law, because if you don't say 6 million Jews, you can go to jail.
Right.
So it leads to all kinds of different discussions. But what he's doing, it's a short circuit in the programming. You're in this instance, we're not jumping around the programming. We're confronting it directly because anyone white with an opinion on race or culture is always called a Nazi wants to kill 6 million Jews.
Right. Now, and let me mention there a little word of caution. That technique is a little bit more advanced and difficult than just saying our people.
No doubt about it. No doubt about it. This is at the end of the mantra.
Right.
But it's something I went into in the dissident discussion because I've been asked that. Why didn't he just say Nazi? Why did he say Nazi wants to kill 6 million Jews? Because Nazi is heavily associated. We walk into a buzzsaw of $500 billion worth of programming. White supremacist, Nazi, and the reason they're doing that is to try to link you to 6 million dead Jews. What he's doing is jamming it down their throats really quickly, and it creates a short circuit.
Right.
It creates they don't operate the same way. You're not transporting them back. You're jumping around a particular nasty situation like being called a name by confronting it directly and jamming all the associations together. It is pretty advanced, but it's not all that difficult. I know a lot of younger people that are starting to do it quite a bit because anyone that talks about race or culture who's white, it doesn't matter how nice you are. James Edwards from the Political Cesspool is the one of the different individuals that I use in the particular podcast, an example, he's just a conservative, paleo-conservative. But because he talks about race and culture, if you go to his Wikipedia or the Anti-Defamation League or SPLC, well, they're calling him a Nazi, neo-Nazi, white supremacist. What you have to do is disarm that. You have to confront that directly because the enemy is always going to call us what they want to call us. And we are always going to call them what they are, anti-white.
That's
you
right.
have to confront it directly in some instances.
Right.
But
being called a name is just something we all want to avoid. First of all, I want to go back to that Nazi wants to kill 6 million Jews things. The reason why I caution people about that, it is effective if you can use it correctly. But I have seen many people who have been in our struggle for a while, who have been racially aware for a while. And, you know, it's kind of like taking that red pill or that blue pill in the Matrix. I mean, it kind of changes your whole perspective once you start realizing that the main issue confronting our nation is white genocide. And we take, since our perspective has been completely changed, a lot of times we'll say things that we understand, but that a regular citizen out there does not click in their head yet. Like, even the word white genocide, I've mentioned that and had people go, you know, like question, like, are you saying that you want white people to genocide other people or something like that? Because they've been so heavily programmed. I have to explain, no, I'm talking about white people as the victims of an attempted genocide. You have to really spell it out, you know.
Sure, it really, everything depends on your audience, but that was one of the last things because I always get asked why he jams that together. There's a particular reason for everything he does, but you have to get around this label that they always label as Nazi, neo-Nazi, and he gets around it by confronting it directly and jamming it, the programming back at them. And it does work, because if you say Nazi or white supremacist, they're going to invoke a different response than if you say Nazi who's going to kill 6 million Jews. What you're doing is linking it to what they're trying to accuse you of being associated with.
Yeah,
you know, it's just it's actually pretty advanced. You're right, but it's something that I think especially the white nationalists or the paleoconservative, it's something they see every day, that they're white with an opinion, so they always get called the same names. And having a little tool ready to disarm it can help in many circumstances. It's in the mantra.
Right, right. Yeah. The most dangerous thing about being called names is that you would eventually get used to it, because then you're done. You should always be sensitive to being called names, and you should always have something to fire back. I was talking to a fellow this morning, and we were talking about the general state of our nation, but I had not specifically mentioned race. And he said something like, "Yeah, but then they always call us racists." And I laughed and I said, "Yes." And most people wet their pants and go hide in a corner when they get called a racist. And so, you know, everybody wants something to say when they get called a racist, which is why.
Sure.
Go ahead.
Which is why we give them something to say. And of course, the famous thing to get called is a Nazi. You know, what Bob is doing is not never saying a word that is heavily armed that they spend $500 billion programming him with. So he's never going to say Nazi or neo-Nazi. He's going to say Nazi wants to kill 6 million Jews. He's going to jump that association.
Right.
That's what he's doing. It is actually very effective, especially online. It can be effective everywhere. In other words, just like we never say the white race, I always try to say my race or our race. I never say the word Nazi or neo-Nazi. I say Nazi wants to kill 6 million Jews. It becomes kind of a joke after a while. If you stand in front of the mirror and do it, what you're doing is not fighting their programming. You're jamming it. And these are simple techniques, really, but they become invaluable from time to time, and they're not terribly difficult to put in practice. It just takes a little bit of mind work, especially for the dissident who's not used to being on a consistent message or using something consistent.
Yeah, it's most difficult with your older conservative people. Your younger people are really – they've been called racist so much it really doesn't – it doesn't – or the racism and diversity, these terms have become cliche and kind of a joke, which helps us a lot.
Yeah, our enemy has one person in every area code in America and Canada. I think there's 200 and something. Our enemy has one person there, one political correctness officer, one anti-white there that'll call the local SPLC or whatever and report something or yell racism or something. What we're doing is we're countering that, and I believe we have it countered all across the white world right now, with one white rabbit sitting there to yell at the pink rabbit.
Right. Now
that's what you have to do.
We don't have a whole lot of time left in the show, and I can't let you off the show without talking about your perspective on world events, because that's one of the main reasons I tune into your show, and it's fascinating how you've predicted the direction things are moving, and then to see everything just start to hit like dominoes that are in North Africa and the Middle East. But before we do that, I wanted to mention one more little meme.
Sure.
One more little catchphrase that is very effective, and that's one that I heard you use originally, and that is, you're either pro-white or you're pro-white genocide.
It really depends on the audience. Bob will say you're either pro-white or anti-white. Which is okay. A certain audience love that, pro-white or pro-white genocide. I use that, but it depends on my audience. It's the same thing. You're getting the same point across. It is a little more extreme, but dissidents love that extreme stuff, and it works. It really works around the right crowd.
Yeah.
It just depends. You got to. Everything is about finding your skill set and feeling your way through your audience. And the average that one white rabbit I want to talk to in any particular area code is already good at talking to people. He or she just wants to know what to say and when to say it.
That's right.
Show you.
One thing I really like about that term, you're either pro-white or you're pro-white genocide,
is it true?
It's true. Well, yeah. And it's guaranteed to evoke a reaction. And you've automatically controlled the talking point. Because, that's the big battle in our conversations, is to control the talking point. I mean, you can be the greatest debater in the world, but if you're trying to argue about the Holocaust, and you're going to lose because it's a losing talking point. But when you say either you're pro-white or you're pro-white genocide, the only direction an anti-white can really go with that is that genocide denial. And so
you just ask them a question. So you approve of this genocide against white children?
Right.
You approve of this? You approve of this genocide against my race?
Right.
You keep asking that. So you approve of this? You know, and they won't know what to do.
Right.
You know, a lot of times what they'll do is they'll jump over and say, "Wow, you killed the Indians." I say, "Well, wait a minute. No one's flooding Saudi Arabia with non-Arabs and saying, you know what, you destroyed the ancient Persian empire and you annihilated the Zoroastrian priests. And because you did that, we're going to create a blended humanity in only Saudi Arabia."
Yeah.
You know, this is only for – and I could do this country to country because every country's killed someone.
Right.
Every nationality has. And you do this handful of countries and just say, you know, only white children are being subjected to this. Only white countries are doing it. Only anti-whites like you support it. It's genocide. And you just keep making your point.
Yeah. On that – here, let me give how I respond to that, because it's similar. But, you know, if somebody tries to say, well, first of all, that's wonderful when they say, oh, but you killed the Indians, because what they're doing is they're justifying genocide. They're
right.
saying, yeah, white people need to be genocide and destroyed because they did something bad back in history. Which, they've
right.
dug their own grave right there because they're trying to
right.
justify genocide. In fact, you can come right. back with just like, if you want to keep it short and sweet.
You approve of this genocide, don't you?
Right.
Well,
you can just say, are you justifying genocide?
Yeah, but what they'll do is, what they're going to try to do is argue that there's no such thing as genocide, then justify it. And then what I'll do is trip them up. I'll say, wait a minute, you just said there's no such thing as white rabbit genocide. If there's no such thing, why are you justifying?
Right. And then, of course, if they try to say there is no genocide against white people, that opens up so many different angles. You can hit them with nice, sure. easy mantra talking points like, well, if I told a black man that I wanted to flood every African nation with tens of millions of non-Africans and then assimilate the black population, any sane black man would see that as genocide. Basically, there's a no-win situation there. And then after that point, they'll usually try to justify it. Well, white people deserve to be genocide because slavery, Indians, whatever.
They start looking crazy.
Yes.
That's what you want.
Yes.
You want them to start looking crazy. You want them to go – right now, most of our race is heavily annoyed by that person. What you're doing is making them look like a genocidal anti-white nutball, which is what they are.
Yes.
What they are. But it also on my site, we're going to be adding up a famous conversation with a couple people. One of them, you know, Lord Nelson, about some different techniques he uses too. So you can check my particular site, and there's other ways to go about this to have the same effect. But by and large, these bullet points, our consistent message is basically working.
It is.
Our enemy on an international level, our enemy is going to their death very, very soon. Very soon, and our message is very important for what comes after that and everything else, and anything beforehand. So what you do from here to there will count.
Right.
So try to help. You know, all I can ask you to do is defend yourself when called a racist. In your opinion, I'm a racist. You're just saying that because I'm white. Anti-racism is just a code word for anti-white. If you do that once a week or once a day, this type of system cannot hold up under those type of contradictions. Just like a wine glass can't hold up against an opera singer.
Now, I know a lot of our listeners here are going to go over to Whitaker Online, and they're going to look up the mantra, and they're going to read it. And so let me give you guys a little advice for the first time you do that. Number one, yes, Bob Whitaker is a highly intelligent person. But this mantra here is not deep. It really means what it says. It, you know, one of the first things when I read the mantra was I was looking for a deeper meaning there. No, it's that simple. It's just what it says there. And second thing is you have probably about 10 different talking points within the mantra. I have never used the mantra in its entirety with someone. People's eyes will glaze over. There's a lot of heavy duty yet simple things right there. So you
certainly can. I know plenty of people that do use the whole thing. But what you're doing though, whether or not when they glaze over like that, they've heard the whole thing and you've already affected them on some level. But there are various different ways to go. They'll go about it in sound bites or to work into it. Just depends. Online, it gets used over and over again, obviously. But the idea was to use the whole thing, get the whole thing out there. But for a dissident to get their head around it, you generally got to piecemeal it and give them a few techniques so they can get their feet wet in a consistent message. Because it is a different mental state, so to speak.
Right. And it's something you have to use regularly. You have to train with it over and over again and break it down into individual senses and practice using it in conversations. You know, like I heard Horace say in one of his early shows, you know, practice it on your neighbor's kid, practice it on your dog, you know, practice it wherever. Essentially, it is a very powerful weapon there, but just like any other weapon, you know, if you were going to pick up a assault rifle or something and you had never shot a gun before, you're going to need to practice with it, target practice a lot to get effective with it. And it's all there. I mean, within the mantra is all the tools you'll ever need to combat any sort of arguments that come against you. But you're going to have to practice with it a lot. So it's automatic.
Yeah, it's a field day arguing within the confines of the mantra because your opponent is always going to have to argue genocide. But in general, for the dissident, for someone getting their feet wet, start simple. Anti-racism is just a code word for anti-whites. Africa for the Africa, Asia for the Asias, Mexico for the Mexicans, white countries for everybody. Simple things like that are stuff that you can say in a conversation and start seeing how they work. Stuff we went over in the past hour are very simple things. Our average listener right now can use immediately to start affecting change in their environment and the people around them. Simple, very simple little tools, the jump around programming or confront programming. And get your feet wet in the mantra.
Right. I think the initial level on the mantra is people just memorize it and they understand that it's generally effective. I think after that, you start realizing when you're on Facebook or you're on some forum or something, you realize when somebody walks into a minefield and when somebody who's against us just steps in it, and then you can clobber them with one line of the mantra. Because a lot of times, if you're in a debate, if you can knock somebody out of the park with one line and they have to spend three paragraphs trying to respond to you, you've won in the eyes of anybody who's watching.
Sure, these are short. Even the mantra itself is not terribly long. It's short. It's simple. When we post it online, we post the whole thing. We copy and paste it. And the stuff we do is very short. It's to the point. It sometimes people don't know exactly what you've done to them until you've done it.
Right. And if you, if you use it a lot, it's going to become automatic. Like if you've been in the military, and I haven't been in the military, but you know, if you're going through basic training or if you're, in martial arts and you're learning something, you don't want to have to think about what you're going to do when you're in a critical situation. You just want your response to be automatic. And if you practice,
right, exactly.
If you practice with the mantra a lot, you won't have to think about what you're going to say when somebody's coming at you. Your response is going to be automatic. It's going to be a knockout blow every time.
Sure, but yeah, exactly. Just start small and understand that everything we talked about in the last hour is within the confines of the mantra. And start small and then build and get your feet wet on Bob's site on WhitakerOnline.org. That's WhitakerOnline.org, www.WhitakerOnline.org. You can go to the blog and you can see the thing for the mantra at the top. You can read that. But general comment six. General comment six is where a war is happening. There's an actual war for the indigenous white rabbits of Europe, as I call them. It's an actual war going on. If you miss a day's worth of, look at all the different posts of where this stuff is going to post, all the different videos going on, and all the different things. It's an ongoing war. It's kind of like a war diary, if you will. But you can go there and you can see everything going on. And you can go to any of the different YouTube videos on my site, whiterabbitradio.net, and get an idea. And there'll be some different dissident videos. Famous dissidents are going to come on message. It's what I'm hearing. I'm hearing all kinds of interesting stuff. But so look for our message. You might be surprised on who comes out with this stuff on your TV screen.
Horace, we got about 30 seconds left. Can you give us a little preview, might be, of what you'd be talking about in your next podcast about world events here in like 30 seconds?
I'm going to talk about World War III has started. Our enemy doesn't really have a choice. They are going to their death. They have serious problems. They've turned on their machines sometime by late 2009. They have no other choice but to go into this huge disastrous war, which is horrible, but they're going to go to their death. And what I'm going to talk about is all the problems they have.
All right, well, I'm looking forward to it. I listen to every one of your podcasts. We're out of time completely, so we're going to have to wrap it up. To the listeners out there, until next time, walk tall, stay proud, and don't give them an inch.